Blog Talk Radio. Good evening to all of our listeners from Wise Women Media, the radio show. This is Anita Stewart, your host. And we want to thank our sponsors, Here Be Monsters, Roundtree 7, and the Hoodoo Blog, and Daughters of Isis. And tonight we want to introduce a friend of mine, somebody I've known for a number of years, a well-known psychic in the Gainesville area, and an animal communicator, a tarot creator. And our guest is Flash Silvermoon. Flash, thank you very much for being on the show tonight.
Oh, you're very, very welcome.
And can you give us kind of a little synopsis of exactly who you are in maybe 10 sentences or less?
Okay. Who are you? said the caterpillar on the mushroom.
Right.
Or was it the Cheshire Cat? It's a good question.
Yeah, that was the line, wasn't it?
Yeah. You. Who are you?
He was smoking.
Yes. Yep. Love that. Love that story. It's interesting. The longer I live, the more complicated the answer. And that was some of my music that we just heard. It's a song called Dancing with the Snake. And I definitely set out to become a rock musician. And that was really my direction almost wholly ever since I was maybe 15, 16 years old in the New York City, Jersey area. And somehow, magic starts sneaking up right next door to the music. And I'll give you a much more detailed explanation about that in time. And the magic
song, especially the drum riff at the end. But tell us what led you to writing that particular song.
That particular song is called Dancing with the Snake. And I had just gotten a new keyboard, and I wanted to check out some of the sounds. And that first riff, dun, 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 I started to play it, and it just took me away. And I started playing it over and over again, and the words just came falling out of my mouth. It's a very shamanic piece, Dancing with the Snake, and I work with the four elements. Each one, I'm a stare into the sea, a stare into the flame, etc., etc. And it just, once it got a hold of me, it just turned into this very trance-like piece. And I really enjoy performing it live. And I'm able to do it just about the way you hear it. Most of the stuff I'm doing on keyboard, including the little oboe solo in there, and I'm playing djembe on another track, giving it that heavier drum part. And so it really is a song that kind of takes me away when I wrote it and when I play it as well. And it's one of my more favorites from that particular CD. And
well, the other one that you sent me, I had an MP3 of another one that I wanted to put on, but I thought, I thought that Dancing with the Snake was a better intro. But it was Savor You Like Chocolate. And what I'm going to do tonight after the show is I'm going to put both of those MP3 links up on the blog post with your promotional piece on our blog, wisewomenmedia.posteris.com, so people can listen to Dancing with the Snake again, and they can also check out the song Savor You Like Chocolate, both of which I absolutely love.
Thank you.
How does, when you're writing these pieces of music, how does the magic and the creativity and everything work together? Do you have to do something beforehand, or do you just kind of go with the flow and let it happen as you're playing the music? or writing the music at the same time?
Well, you know, I'm a double Pisces, so I'm pretty much in the zone a lot of the time. But sometimes a song will just seize me.
Right.
For instance, the one New Orleans on My Mind, Katrina bothered me so deeply. I mean, it just haunted me. And there can be many reasons why that was so. I've always felt very connected to the African diaspora and to New Orleans, too, to some extent. But it was more than that. And as I wrote the song, it took many different forms. It started off being a mournful blues song, and then it shifted into like an Afro-Caribbean beat, but I was rapping over it, and I kind of took in all the different aspects of African music and put them together, linked them in one song, and was basically raising some hell about what happened there. And the last part of that song, I sing, don't leave them there alone, Dambala, take them home. And Dambala is a sacred serpent and has a lot to do with the ancestral spirits of that particular tradition. And I'm singing at the end the chant, the Yoruba chant, Dambala, 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 Owedo, over and over again. And every time I perform that song, my body shakes by the time I'm there. And I know that we're sending some of the lost spirits home.
Right, right.
And when I perform that with Omi Aladora Ajamu, who's a priestess of Yemanja in the Yoruba tradition, it really goes deep. And she'll do
that. That was a traumatic time for all of us that lived in the Gulf region, knowing that there were other outside forces that were actually working in malefic ways. The fact that there were anybody at all that survived that from the areas affected was a miracle. But it really was to me. It just seemed like it was more of a depopulation agenda than anything.
Yes.
So I remember you and I talking on the phone at the time that was happening and sending energy to the people there, especially when they were rounding them up like they were cattle and putting them in the amphitheater there.
Yeah.
And because I knew that was that what was going to transpire from that was going to be a horrible, horrible thing. I just knew that beforehand.
Yes, I could feel that.
When I discussed it with people afterwards, they said, oh, you're such a conspiracy theorist, you know.
Yeah, well, but sometimes there are conspiracies, and that's no theory.
Hey, I like that. I'm going to use that.
All right, you got it.
You know, like David Letterman writing down on his blue card, when somebody says something and he wants to remember it, he takes his blue 3x5 and writes it down. So we'll move on from the music, which I want you to devote a little bit of time towards the end telling us which albums you have that are available. But I wanted to move on to
one more thing about the link with the music and the magic, because I was seeing them for the longest time, like say maybe 20 years ago, as separate. And even though they did link up in many ways in terms of the writing and performance, and I always did ritualistic things at my shows, I still was seeing them as different, as separate. And one day I went to a presentation by this shaman, and I watched what he was doing, and he had this art show. And I finally got it, that I was a shaman, that was part of who I was, because what I watched about him fit like a glove for me, that there was the mysticism on a very deep level, but there's also a strong creative path.
Mm-hmm.
And that just, when I saw that, I said, okay, I get it. These are not separate at all. In ancient times, these would be exactly how a person defined themselves, because of these particular parts of themselves.
And in olden times, especially with age, it's not like it is today, but with age came power.
Yes.
Power and knowledge. And when we look at that today, it's kind of upside, well, it is. It's not kind of, it is upside down.
Yeah.
It's more like the older generation is discredited. And I think there's reasons for that because, you know, of the medicines they're given that dumb older people down. But back then, back in those old ways, the older people were venerated and
yes.
deeply, deeply respected for the knowledge that they had and that they could pass on to others. So I think that in some cultures that still exists, but
yes.
not too much in a Western culture, which is really...
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why I decided to do, you know, this show, Wise Women Media, because I knew that we women, especially over 40, over 50, around our age bracket, as we go into our elder years, we have a lot of knowledge, but, you know, we're in many ways disrespected, and our knowledge.
And it's important to share this knowledge, because we can't have this dying with us.
Yeah, we want to pass it on to the younger, definitely.
Yes.
And I thought, well, this show could be like a running commentary of all different kinds of women that have something to say that can impart a little bit of knowledge. And I love the fact that Blog Talk Radio just archives everything automatically. So I think that's a great thing, too. But let me ask you a few more questions. Let's go on to one of your greatest creations, which, of course, I think linked you and I together since I've always
uh-huh.
studied the tarot. I've studied the tarot for many, many years. I've never created one. But you created one. So tell us about how that whole idea and concept for that tarot deck was born. And tell us the name of it and how
sure.
people can get back.
Okie doke. Well, the project, this little project that I thought I was doing, it is called The Wise Woman's Tarot. And you can get that on my website, which is the, you need to regroup around how to find me because somehow or other the links on the promo are not quite right. Nobody's fault, but that's how it is. So if you want to reach me on my website, it's actually flashsilvermoon.com. They may say these other links aren't working. Well, this one will. That'll get you there. And the Wise Woman Tarot was just going to be this little project. I worked with the Rider-Waite for years, and I was going to do a better how-to book about how to read the Rider-Waite because my students loved the way I taught. They said, you make it so easy, please write it down. Please write it down. That's what we need. And I said, okay. Off I went to write down my version of a good way to teach the tarot. And there was this one renegade page simply called Visions for a New Deck. Well, Visions for a New Deck page. 1, 2, 3, going on and on. It was a bit of a game changer, to say the least. It was an imperialist page, is what it was. And
uh-huh.
it wanted to have everything. And I realized that it was not enough just to teach how to read the tarot. But I had really unique ideas and complaints about the traditional tarot, and I needed to really do it right. I really needed to put out there a new deck because I believe magic is supposed to be organic. Now, I wanted to do it right in that I spent a little project, 25 years. I probably researched about 15 years, researched and wrote and designed and wrote and designed. And because I didn't want to copy anyone else's work, I didn't want to do anything like anybody else had done in terms of feminist tarot. And I wanted to respect the body of magical arcane knowledge, which is the tarot, which is worthy of keeping, yet I didn't like decks that had all white people on them.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, I wanted to drag us out of the Middle Ages. Not a good time for women. So had to change the court cards tremendously. And we got rid of the kings and the queens and the pages and the knights. Boom. Gone from the Middle Ages. And I changed the kings into shamans, the queens into priestesses, the knights into seekers, and the pages into maidens. And
yeah,
just,
I like that whole idea.
You know, it just gave a whole new way. And I tell people, too, that just because these cards, one might be masculine, one might be feminine, I see how any given person could be any one of those four court cards, depending on what's going on with them, depending how things are resonating. And then I made an all-female major arcana. And some people had a little problem with that. But,
now, tell us about your problem. I mean, you were going to try to publish this through more mainstream channels than what you ended up using. But what was some of the critiques from these mainstream publishers that you got when you were trying to publish this deck?
Well, it was kind of funny. I was up in New York, my old stomping grounds, and the woman who ran one of the occult shops had seen just the beginnings of my deck. It wasn't anywhere finished. And she said, oh, Flash, I want this deck. I'll get 100 of them. I'll promise you 100 right now. I'm going to call up, what was his name? He's the head of the big tarot guy, Stuart Kaplan.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
The head of head of U.S. Games.
Mm-hmm.
And so she calls him up and tells him that he should get in touch with me. So, you know, people talk. Rarely do they actually do what they say they're going to do. Well, she did, because she was that enthusiastic. And he called my parents' house, where I was visiting, about 4 times. And I'm thinking, holy moly, this guy is really interested in what I'm doing. That's a real honor. So, you know, 4 calls from the head of a company is a big deal. And so I finally get back to him, and I got back out of the city, and he acts real nonchalant, like, he doesn't really care very much what I'm doing. I'm thinking, four calls, you wanted to get me. So I told him I had only 2 more days being up north, and I understand he must be very busy, and I don't know if it'll work for him to see me, but I'm available to drive to Connecticut to see him. And he said, yeah, how about tomorrow? And I thought, okay. And I got up there, and, you know, he was acting like a cagey dude who wanted to find out how to kind of undermine my confidence so he could score something cheaper. And that was this whole vibe that he was giving off. But it was really amazing to be in that compound, because it was every tarot deck under the sun you've ever seen in your life.
Now, to his credit,
I've got to give him props for really supporting Pamela, I forget her middle name, but she was the artist for the Rider-Waite deck, which should be called the Pamela Coleman Smith tarot deck.
Oh, that's Pamela Coleman Smith, who was the original artist.
She was the artist.
Really, she died penniless for the Rider-Waite.
She did. But he really has done a lot to resurrect her name and has a whole museum to her in his building. And he told me that she was a lesbian of color from the West Indies.
Right.
And her partner never got anything, and she died a pauper. very sick.
Well, that happened quite a lot back then,
yes, it
too,
does.
when people in the gay community were coupled, and then, you know, usually it was because the family stepped in and they would take whatever, you know, belonged to their loved one.
You know, so to his credit, he really stood up for her and promoted her after, of course, he got all the money. And
exactly.
So he saw my,
oh, my
work, and he said, this is really some of the best work I've ever seen, but you have too many cultures in it. And I'm like holding my head. I'm thinking, you missed the whole point, mister. That was my point. I wanted to put a place for everybody at the table. That all the cultures, especially the matriarchal ones that we don't know much about, and some of the ones that we know a lot about. I wanted a place for women from the Philippines and women from Africa and women from the Middle East, that there be goddesses and some gods from all of these places. And he said, well, you know, if you made Egyptians for the wands and you made, oh, Native Americans for this suit, we could have like four suits. I said, yeah, but that wouldn't show everybody, would it? And, you know, he wasn't feeling very reasonable. And I wasn't either. And so I thought, okay,
it would have been a wrong move, definitely, to publish with him. Even if he wanted to do it, it wouldn't have just been, you guys weren't on the same cosmic wavelength.
Oh, not even at all. Now, his artist ran out after me and said, listen, please, you may want to get in touch with him again, because sometimes he just does that to scare people. And this was just his first look. You know, he may change his mind. But he wanted to have all the paintings. He wanted to have all the rights and all the control. And I thought, nope. That's not how I want to roll with this. This is very important. And this may be the most important thing I ever do with my whole life. And I want to put my name next to something I can stand with.
And leave a legacy. See, as it were, something that comes from spirit, that's pure, and that's generated in a pure way. I can certainly understand that.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't do it to make a pile of money, although a little money wouldn't hurt. I don't mind selling them. I'd like to sell them all. That'd be a wonderful thing. But it was not about me becoming, you know, totally a star from doing this. It was about getting the work out and having people use it and having this particular work change consciousness, because I really felt that there were things that I was doing with the tarot that can and will and do change consciousness.
So the other thing I was going to ask you about, since we're on the topic of the tarot, is how does it aid in psychic development? How does it help you? And when you give a consultation to somebody else, how does it help them?
That's a good question. Well, it's interesting. When I was working on creating this, I really had in mind that this deck would, in a way, speak for itself, that the tarot would literally talk to the reader, or even just the person handling them. And I wanted it to be that way. I really wanted it to be out the playing field somehow, so that it would do just that. And I find that the imagery in some ways is very self-explanatory. It's also very evocative. And I've had total novices handle these cards, and they'll just look at it. And I said, you know, never mind trying to pull out all the symbology. Just tell me what you get. And then when I teach this to people, when I teach them anything I do, it's like, it's not important at first to get every last little detail. What you need to do is tune in and allow the energy and the message to just come to you. And then be brave enough to say the first thing that comes to your mind.
Right.
Because that's going to open people up.
At that point, when you're working with the tarot, then it's you, the person actually doing the divination, that's become the channel that can assist or help the querent. And I would kind of, like, when I work with my own meditation, that's kind of how I allow myself to become like a giant prism that's taking it in from, you know, the crown chakra, and it's just mm-hmm. coming in. And you know, I can, that's, if I do that for others, if I do a reading or a consultation for others, that's where I place myself. I get a really weird vibe when people will say, they'll make comments about good readings and bad readings and things like that. I don't think there's any such thing as a good reading or a bad reading. I think a lot of times...
Sometimes there's good and bad clients.
Yeah, well, the querent a lot of the times is not receptive. Like, we're allowing ourselves to be receptive by becoming the channel. But the querent themselves, the ones asking the questions, the ones seeking counsel, are totally closed to what they're receiving.
Yeah,
not
I
all
love
the time.
When they come and they like to play Stump the Psychic.
Yes.
And they come in and they've got their hands folded across their chests, and they sit down, and they are going to hold on to every last molecule of information that they might have because they want to make sure I really can do what I say I can.
Right.
And when I smell that, I say to them, listen, this can be a really beautiful and deep experience of us sharing and you really getting your money's worth. Or you can try to see if I'm any good. I've done this for 40-plus years. You can't flip a bad burger for that many years and stay in business. So let's just get that out of the way.
Right.
Let's just presume I know what I'm talking about and, you know, give me a chance to give you something good.
Right, right, right. Yeah, I've seen that happen, too, and it's frustrating because the people, sometimes I want to think in a really bad way and say these people don't want the information. I would rather not work with them. I really don't want to process anything for them. But at that point, something will open up. But, yeah, I like the way you tackle that and you become emboldened by what
yeah.
you know you can. And, you know, it's their loss if they
yes.
are testing you. It's their loss.
Yes, it is. And I'll explain to them. It's like,
go
look,
ahead.
If you're an artist and you're having a couple of shows, or you're a recording artist and you want to get some CDs out, and you're just sitting on this, and you're wanting me to talk to you about your career, well, honey, don't you think if we just say, I'm a musician, what do you think is going to go on for me? I'll be able to get more specific. Now, sometimes I don't need them to say anything, but sometimes mm-hmm. when they're really trying to cling to that information, it shuts it down.
Right.
So, you know, sooner or later, I usually have a very good experience, but I prefer to get to it sooner.
Exactly. Exactly. That just, the fact that you're emboldened and you can say that to them, and then if they respond and open up, because I think it's really at that point an opening of the heart chakra. If
yes.
they're going to be anything, they have to open the heart and be willing to receive it, and whether or not they're paying for it, they're paying for your time and your experience.
Yes.
But
yes.
Even if they're getting it for free, they have to be willing to receive it. They have to open up.
Yes.
It's an even exchange. You're giving and they're receiving.
And you know, there's some people that think that there should be no financial exchange for spiritual work.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I feel very, very differently about that. I mean, I'm always willing to make a good trade and a good exchange. I think it's important to exchange something for something, it just makes it work better. And I don't charge an exorbitant amount when I charge. But it's, I think, you know, it's work. I've spent, you know, 40-plus years cultivating a talent and a gift. You know, it matters.
I'm learning this lesson, and it's really amazing that you say that, because just over the past 2 weeks, I was an acquaintance, actually, from the event that we attended, the Merlin Stone Memorial. A lady from there just called me up out of the blue probably about 3 weeks ago. I mean, for those that know me, everybody knows I've been unemployed since October.
Right.
And this lady calls me out of the blue and says, let's get together and go to the community gardens and pick vegetables. And we had a lot to talk about, because here I am racing around trying to get these jobs, trying to get myself employed. Every door's been closed, so obviously this is not what I'm supposed to be doing. And she's telling me, you're giving away so much for the volunteer work and the political work. And she said, you have to redesign your life. And she said, and now it's time to understand the even rate of exchange. When you give, you need to get back.
Yes.
And she said, and if you're not getting a reward in that, then you need to stop what you're doing and reassess what you're doing. And if, number one, she said, if it doesn't give you bliss, don't do it. But if there's not an even rate of exchange, that's not something you should be doing. So I started to think about that and really ponder, meditate on that over the past couple weeks. And it is really at the point where I'm in the middle of a big redesign. And I keep thinking, is this because Saturn return is coming around now?
That'll do it.
Do you think that's what it is?
Yeah, how old are you?
I'm 56.
Yeah, you're getting near it.
And I think that this is just, this is life-changing. I can't do anything now like I did before.
Whatever you didn't get accomplished between 28 and 30 is going to come back and bite you the second return, which starts around when you're 58.
Right.
And it's kind of like in the first one, but also in the second, what have you always wanted to do? Why haven't you done it? And if you just write about all those things, you're going to have your next year's outline for about the next 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
It'll all be on those pages. And it's so important. You can't live for him, her, the church, the state, the president, the dog, I mean, you know, the kids. It can't be about what your parents want. It has to be you redefining yourself as a reborn person.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So now we're going from tarot into astrology, and I know you and I both love the tarot. I mean, it really is one of my first loves. But astrology came to me really about the same time when I was a teenager, and I know you love it too, and I've used it in tandem with the tarot, because
absolutely,
I think systems are so perfectly meshed together. That's the only word I can think of. They're meshed together. They're meant to be used together, and I find it kind of amazing that more people are not using astrology. And when I, to any of the listeners tonight that are checking into the program or checking into the archives later, we're not talking about astrology, you know, like reading your horoscope in the newspaper. That's not what we're talking about here. So I will just open this up to you, Flash, so you can tell us how astrology came to you and what it means to you and how you mesh the two systems together.
It's like sometimes people will call me, and they've seen my website, and they see I offer this, that, and the other, and they say, so, well, where should I start? You know, what kind of a reading should I get? And I'll say, well, if you have a lot of current event kind of things you're wanting to check on, relationships and jobs, it's like right now we should start with just a basic tarot reading. And people say, is that a psychic reading? I said, of course. How could it not be? And the tarot is the tool, but the psychic ability is what comes with the reader, with the priestess, what have you, and it extends to everything that she does. And so then astrology, if you want to take a very holistic view of a person's life, and when you're looking in particular for timing, the astrology can help really nail some of that down. It's like, okay, is this current affairs, or is this, or do we need to really look at you from the ground up, looking at all of what makes you who you are? Because what's so beautiful about astrology, I think, is that it's not about how to fit in with society better. It's about how to be the best you possible. We all come in with a roadmap. We all come in with a mission. And by looking at the chart, it really helps you define what that is. You can see, okay, this is going to be a really bumpy path to do 9-to-5 kind of work. You can do it, but look over here. You're really suited to be your own boss, and you've got a lot of creative energy, and you want to step into the world in a way to express who you are. Okay, so these are some directions that people don't just grow up knowing, unless like in ancient Egypt, they did the horoscope for the children as they came in, and if they saw this one was going to be suited for X, Y, and Z, they would start to direct them from the beginning, which would be really, really helpful.
Right. And astrology, a lot of people don't understand this, too. Astrology and astronomy back then were really the same science.
Right.
They were the same study, because the two were together. Anything that was learned in astronomy was learned in astrology. And chart casting was done, of course, in ancient Egypt, but as you go through history, it was done for Jesus. That's why the wise men came.
Right.
It was done for the royal families of just about every European country, and it was just a matter of course that when you were born and you were a significantly important person, a chart was drawn so they would know about you right away and know what kind of life you were going to live, what kind of king you were going to be.
Right.
And of course, we don't know how often it was done with, you know, the middle class or the lower class, because in those old days, there wasn't a lot written down from the middle class or the poor class. But the astrologers and astronomers were also always considered the wise men of their community. So they were the ones that people would seek out before they bought that piece of property or before they took that woman as their wife or before a woman would marry, et cetera, et cetera. So this was done as par for the course. And it was funny because these traditions would have been not up to par with the Christian religion, which of course was sweeping through Europe at that time, but yet these traditions, again, I'm using the word mesh, they were meshed together.
Mm-hmm.
And even Christians, so-called Christians, would have their chart cast or drawn. And interesting when you study the history of it, but I just heard about this guy who supposedly teaches astrotheology. I'll put a link up, but his name was Santos Bonacci, and he's on YouTube. And I've just started to kind of like prick the surface at understanding exactly what he's doing with astrology. He's Australian. But I'll put the link up as a comment under your profile so people can go and research what he's doing, too. It's very interesting. But anyway, what are some of the most profound readings that you've done where you've actually been able to do a reading for somebody and then you find out later, wow, that was like right on, and it's kind of blown your own mind?
I've definitely had a few of those lately. But mm-hmm. one of my first like that, I was just a little witchlet reading cards in a club in New York City. And I was upstairs, I was down the street from the local cop shop and also a whole lot of theaters. So I had mm-hmm. cops in there and stars. So this one particular day, a cop and his buddy came in, and he sat down. I don't think I was even reading a year by then. And this has never happened quite like it since then either. But it was quite strange. I felt the adrenaline in my own body, and I started to shake a little, and I told him, I said that don't go on any calls to a building that's kind of narrow inside alone. Just for this week, I see something happening within this week only, and I feel like you're going to be very near death, but you won't die. And you probably will take a desk job after that. And I've never had to say anything like that to anybody since. That was quite a big deal for a junior reader. But I had the guts to tell him what I saw. And I knew as I was saying these words to him that, in fact, it would be true. So I was working there every night. And so I came in the next night, and his buddy comes running in. I think it was actually the third night after the particular reading. And he says, I don't know what you told my buddy, but he was taking a call last night, and someone shot at him point blank. And he's alive.
God.
And he's alive. But he's scared big. And mm-hmm. I said, well, I'm sure in a way that my telling him he wouldn't die in some way made him live. But, I mean, somebody went into this. It was a narrow room. It was a hotel lobby, just as I had seen. And someone just came in and took a gun to his head and missed him.
Oh.
And
when I know I've done consultations like that that have blown my mind later when I find out, you know, exactly how on the mark I was. And it's really just it convinces me that that anybody can do it if they teach themselves how to do it, if they let themselves be led. And if they allow themselves to become that pure channel, that prism, so they take that same energy, because the whole thing is I just envision that light and energy coming through the crown of the head, going down to the heart, and then going out at a horizontal level. Is that kind of how you see it?
Quite honestly, I don't see it. I just kind of surround myself with light and get in there.
Yeah. Because I appeal from the heart. I want it to go from the crown to the heart and then out. And
mm-hmm.
and the other thing is my posture. I know I have to be grounded, but I feel the energy coming up from the earth to the heart.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So that way I'm getting the crown energy from above and then the earth energy coming in through the feet. I don't know if that's the Capricorn rising in me. I don't know what
probably,
that is.
Probably.
Because I have to be in a perfect posture to be doing, like sitting in a straight back chair. I like to have my feet bare when I'm doing the readings too. It's really kind of crazy, but that's how I do it.
Do you have anything in Leo?
No.
Well, you probably have Pluto in Leo.
Yeah, my Pluto's in Leo. I'm thinking.
The reason I'm asking is because what you're describing, and it could be the Capricorn part, but Leos can be very ritualistic. And even though I could be, I'm just not very ritualistic about doing readings. Which doesn't mean I couldn't be, and I am sometimes, but it's kind of a go with the flow thing. And,
right.
I'll tell you, as I got older, this other reading was a really, really significant one. I was on TV 20, which is the local Gainesville channel, and one of the anchors had come out. They were interviewing the top psychics in the area. So they were visiting me and just checking me out and putting me on the air, and I was reading for one of the anchors. And it was a good reading. Everything was going along, you know, check, check, check. Everything was giving her what she needed, and it seemed like she was very pleased with what she was getting. And all of a sudden, out of left field, I'm seeing these two beagles. And I teach my students, if you see it, you got to cough it up. You got to share it.
Right, exactly.
And I said to them, you know, you've got to do it. You just have to be brave and do it. And I thought, well, you know, I'm on TV. There's thousands of people watching this particular piece. I could play it safe and just leave the reading as it was, which was perfectly good. Or I could risk my reputation and look foolish and tell them what I really see seems to be very important because it's really pulling on me. And I decided to do the right thing and risk being foolish. And I said, does a pair of beagles mean anything to you? At which point she broke down and was hysterical. She was inconsolable for a good 10 minutes. We went off camera, got her composed, and we went back on camera. It turns out, and then while we were off camera, the elder beagle started talking to me and was explaining, said, Flash, please, tell her it's okay. It's okay. I really wasn't very well. She did the best she could. It was so good that she at least stopped for us. And the woman is still tearing, but she says, what happened a year and a half ago. I was in Jacksonville, and I saw these two beagles on the side of the road, and I couldn't get to the Humane Society. They were closed, so I brought them home with me, and I brought them to the local animal, the pound, and one of them was killed. And she just kept crying and crying. And the beagle, which was obviously the one who had been killed, she was the mother. She said, please, stop grieving. You were wonderful. You picked us up. And I was able to die in peace because I knew that my baby got a good home because of you. I wasn't feeling very well. Please, ease your heart now. And I'm telling her every word, just channeling it from the beagle on the other side. And I did more for her by being honest and taking that risk than the whole rest of the reading. Because anyone that had that many tears for over a year really needed this help, needed to understand about what really happened. And she was a big animal lover. And I ran into her maybe 6 years after that particular show. And she said, you know, I tell the story of that reading to everybody. And everybody is amazed by what happened. I said, yeah, I tell it pretty often, too, as an advice to my students that you have to take the risks. And, of course, the further along on your path you are, the bigger the risks.
Right, right.
But it's important. Now,
we can go right into your work with animals, because I know that you, like me, are a huge animal lover, but you seem to have a special calling because you are able to communicate with them when they're on the other side and when they're on this side as well.
True.
And tell us a little bit about that.
Sure, I would love to. I love working with the animals. I consider it an honor and a privilege. And really, after working with people for about 42 years, working with animals was really a breath of fresh air, because they don't hide anything. If you give them something that makes them feel good, they're joyful and gracious, and they let you know. Likewise, if you missed your mark, they're not going to do anything. They're just going to go, okay, what else you got? You know, but they're not going to be sitting there and thinking, well, did I feel this or didn't I feel this? Maybe I'm just imagining it. You know, and people do that. They do that all the time. They analyze things to death. And the animals, of course, don't do that at all. They just respond very quickly to what they're being given. And they're always very, very, very gracious. I actually was called into service 2 weeks ago in specific. I mean, I get called into service a lot with the animals. But this was a little bit new and quite fascinating to me. I was doing my morning meditation, and before anything, all of a sudden, I had the face of a male lion friend of mine who has passed on. He was like right in my face, like we were like nose to nose. And then I saw Sierra, the lioness, who has also passed a little more recently. And I thought, well, what is this? And I looked into their eyes, and they looked into mine. And then Sierra, the lioness, showed me an orange tiger walking away. And the message was, you have to go help this cat. And I work with the big cats at the Ears Sanctuary in Citra, Florida. And you know, so I knew exactly who was being talked about. It was this particular compound. I didn't know which cat. So I called Gail, who is one of the founders there, and I said, how are the tigers? She said, oh, everybody's good. I said, even Shiva, because I got a feeling that this particular tiger was having some trouble. And she said, oh, she's okay, but, well, she hasn't been the same since Sierra died. She's been very, very depressed and just moping around something awful. And I thought, oh, I see. See, Sierra is a lioness and Shiva is a tigress, yet they were a couple for many years. They're a little lesbian couple of big cats, and they just really loved each other, hung out with each other. And the story was that Sierra died of cancer, and it was not a quick death, and they had her with different drugs being pumped into her, and the whole time she was on these IV drugs. Shiva, the tigress, would lick her and lick her and lick her and lay near her and lick her. And the day that she died, Shiva put her body over her lover's body and just laid there.
Aww.
And when I heard that story, I thought, I get it. I understand, Sierra. You want me to go take care of your girlfriend. And I've treated plenty of the animals there for grief, because when they lose their buddies, it's a big deal. People don't think that animals have feelings. I don't know how they don't think it, but you'll have these wise men with their white coats on. We've spent millions of dollars, and we've discovered that animals have feelings. Oh, my goodness.
Well, yeah, you know that, and I know that, but you know, before it's like the, it's almost like the men have to say it and then it becomes the rules or the law or science or
I don't mind science catching up. That's good. They should catch up. But what I do mind is the money that goes into such an inane thing as finding out if animals feel, when you could ask a kindergarten child who has a puppy, do animals feel? And they go, oh, yes. Of course they do.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
It's just, it's ridiculous. So I went over to Ears, and I had the homeopathic remedy for grief, which is Ignatia. And I brought that with me. I also brought some mists that I make. They're gem elixirs, and one for uplifting the heart, and some flower essences. And so I made my way over to her turnout, and she was, you know, a little quiet. I saw, you know, a bunch of other cats on the way, but I made sure that, that my main mission for being there was for her. And she's also roommates now with one of my favorite cats, Dante, who has been a very lonely boy because he's a very gentle spirit tiger, and he has not had a good love interest in his whole life. And he's a youngster. I've known him since he was a cub. Gave him flower essences and fed him his bottle, too, for that matter. So these are animals I have long-standing relationships with. So I went over. And I gave her, I knew it was going to be a little challenge to get those little pellets into her, but she usually likes to lick my hands when she sees me. And so I had them between my fingers, and I was ready and waiting for my moment. And as soon as she put her tongue out, I laid them on her tongue, and she took them. And if you go to my website, flashsilvermoon.com, this whole story is there with loads and loads of pictures of what happened next. And you see her rolling around on her back. I mean, she went from, like, kind of droopy to just rolling around. And the two of them started hugging and kissing. And it was blissful because both of them needed partners.
Yeah.
And that day, partially she was in heat. And I'm hoping that, you know, the song, Will She Still Love Me Tomorrow, fits for these two, because Dante really deserves a really wonderful, loving tiger to be friends with, and she needs to help herself get over her loss. So hopefully they looked like they really were accepting each other, and it's a wonderful thing to just see a shift right in front of me. I got the message. I took action. I did what I knew to do to help her, and it helped her. And that is so rewarding. You know, I can't tell you. Especially for
now, you've got to work with horses, too, and dogs.
Yeah.
And I know you're like me. I'm very partial to dogs. I love cats, and I have them, but I don't know, my dog's become very precious to me, and of course I lost my familiar bear.
Yes, and I know that was hard for you.
In 2009. So now, within a month we had a poodle, so I went from a German Shepherd to a poodle, exactly opposite. A black
Scaling
Shepherd.
Down.
Yeah, a black Shepherd, German Shepherd that was elegant and reserved, but a great watchdog and so brilliant. And then I went to a little tiny toy white poodle, so it was like the opposite end of the spectrum. And of course Pierre became our little clown, and now we've been blessed with his son, which I call the thug.
Yeah.
So you know, the two personalities couldn't be any more different, but these two keep us going. And
now
I know
you know about reincarnation.
Uh-huh.
The animals. Did you
feel
like any of your poodles were a reincarnation of bear?
Well, if they were, it would definitely be Pierre, because when we brought his son into the house, automatically Pierre became the reserved one, and his son became the wild one. the wild child.
Uh-huh.
I call him my problem child. So,
it's interesting because the animals don't have to look anything alike.
Nope,
and sometimes even the personality isn't the same, but there is some ephemeral feeling of knowing that this is my baby returned. And
yeah.
They do want to.
And it's a soul connection. It's definitely
yes.
a soul connection.
Yes.
So I just adore these two. And even though his son is a little testy and just, I mean, he grabs his daddy by the collar and drags him around the house. But Pierre does his little get back, and you know, they've adjusted to each other quite well, even though they're both males and not fixed.
Mm-hmm.
We've been very fortunate. We keep them healthy. We do not give them the drugs and the vaccinations, which
yes.
I think are part of
it. Yes.
And the minute I switched them to distilled water, from regular water to distilled water.
Yeah.
You know how the poodles get that crazy enzyme stuff under their eyes? Well, Pierre doesn't
right.
have that.
Right, they look like they're dripping.
Yeah, Pierre doesn't have that, and neither does Xavier, because they're drinking the distilled water. So that makes a big, big difference.
That's really good. Yeah,
yeah,
I work, you know, with all the animals. I have clients that, you know, have dogs and cats and skunks and ferrets. And a lot of horses, love working with the horses. And
now
the
you're,
primates,
you use
too.
Rock flower essences a lot of times for your different healing.
Well, not the Bach. I use Green Hope Farms flower essence exclusively because I like
okay.
them so much better.
Tell the listeners a little bit about what those do and how
sure.
effective they are.
They're so beautifully effective. Whenever you have a rescue animal, be it big or small, there's always some kind of abandonment issues that are going
mm-hmm.
on and that need to be tended to before you can really get what you'd like out of the experience. You know,
mm-hmm.
you could try to teach them to do this and not do that. But if they have big abandonment issues, it's not that you're fighting a losing battle, but you're fighting an uphill battle, which could be very much eased by working on the most important thing first, which is healing the hole in the heart. And I don't mean
mm-hmm.
the physical hole, but one of the combinations that I use is called abandonment and abuse. And they don't have to have abuse. They could just be any of them who are rescues have had some level of abandonment. Or feel it. And in these days of people bringing in their dogs because they can't afford them, you know, you can only imagine how badly these poor pups need it. And it's the same thing. I've treated tigers with it. I've treated a lot of primates with that, too, who've been brought in from the labs. And boy, oh boy, do they need help. And they love what I give them. And it's really sweet. You can see lots and lots of pictures on my Facebook page of me treating horses, donkeys, primates, tigers, lions, bears, dogs, cats. And you can see by their faces what they're experiencing. And it's so, so beautiful. Sometimes just a few drops under the tongue and you'll see right in front of you an animal that goes from being skittish and hiding to sitting and holding their ground. And depending
wow.
on the level of trauma that they've had, that may be enough. Sometimes just a few drops, maybe twice, and they're good to go. Sometimes they really need the whole bottle and to just take it as a tonic day after day for a while, and then they're fine. But it's like night and day. And I love using these for that reason. Even Sultan, I think the biggest tiger at the compound, we were visiting him, and I've known him since he was a little cub. And he can be very terrifying to some people, but not to me. And he comes over, and I gave him a drop of one called Arbor Garden, which makes people and animals feel like they're being held by the angels. And one, I swear, there was two drops in the dropper. I put it right in his mouth, and he licked my hand after, as he always does, and he just sat right down. He had been pacing
wow.
a little bit, and just boom, down he went. So, I mean, it really, it's really nice. So often we don't have immediate gratification with the work we do, but I find with the flowers I often have an immediate response. I was doing some animal readings at a local place called Earth Pets, where they have holistic food. And this woman came in with this little poodle. And I don't know who was shaking worse, her or the poodle. But they were both basket cases. And she was about to take a flight. And she's like, do you think it's going to be okay? Do you think it's going to be okay? You think my dog's going to be okay? We're going to be flying out in half an hour. What do you think? What do you think? What do you think? I said, okay, let's just have a seat. And I want you to hold your dog in your lap. And first, I'm going to treat the dog, and then I'm going to treat you. Because if the whole system isn't treated with something like that, I could have treated the dog, and the dog would be chill, and the woman would still be bouncing off the walls. And the two of them had been driving the people there in the store nuts with their frenetic, crazy energy. And the dog got one or two little drops in his mouth, and boom, he was flat on her lap, not moving a muscle, just as chill as can be. And then I gave her some, and she's like, oh, wow, that's better.
She was just full of anxiety.
Yeah. And so sometimes it's just a little thing like that, and you've changed the world for somebody.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's real gratifying. I did a teaching over at the vet school at University of Florida on one occasion, which was great to get invited to do that. I'm always really trying to help people get a sense of using the holistic remedies for our animals in particular. Some people use them for themselves and they forget their animals. But there's lots of good ways to not have to use veterinary medicine, which so often hurts one thing to fix another, just like all the drugs do. And sometimes we need someone to set a broken leg, and that's all there is to it. You know, it needs to be a good marriage between the allopathic and the homeopathic. But because there's so little being done with the holistic, I take that on as kind of my crusade to try and help the animals. And I went into the vet school, and I said, bring me 7 dogs, you know, that need a little help. And one by one, they brought them up, and I'd tune in. And if there's nothing wrong with the animal, they'll just tell you, they'll communicate what they really think is pretty cool. And this one mm-hmm. dog, I'm looking through his eyes, and all I'm seeing is squirrels. Squirrel, squirrel, squirrel. That's all I got from him. And he's a happy-go-lucky guy, and I told his owner that. He says, oh, my goodness, that's all he does. He looks at them. He chases them. He watches them hours at a time. I said, okay. Well, he told me the truth. And sometimes they'll tell you everything would be fine if they'd stop smoking.
And then ah!
Yeah, it was funny. My first client, my first dog client that wasn't one of my own, because I learned on my own first, and that's so much harder. Oh, my goodness, that's hard. But my first client that wasn't mine, this little dog just spoke plain and clear as could be. And he goes, oh, if only she'd stop smoking, I wouldn't be such a little bitch. And I told the woman who I knew, I didn't even know she smoked. And I just told her what the dog said, and she got all kind of sheepish. And she said, yeah, I guess I better. I said, you know, just don't smoke around your dog, at least. And now that the dog sees, hey, we're getting somewhere, finally someone's listening to me, he goes, oh, and by the way, I'd like a cat. and she goes, well, I'm allergic to cats. I said, it's not for you. He'd like a cat. So she said, well, you know, you're right. this little dog loves to play with my neighbor's cat. And anytime I go over there, he's just happier than can be. I said, good then. You know, more little visits. If you can't have a cat, just help him have more play dates. And
yeah.
So, you know, but it's like once they know you're listening, they'll tell you so much more.
How did you get started on your radio show, What the Animals Tell Me? And how can people listen to that show?
Sure. Well, that's every Wednesday night, 8:30 to 9 p.m. on internetvoicesradio.com. That's Eastern Standard Time. And how I started, I was doing a couple of shows for Karen Tate, who's a wonderful witch, and she used to have a show on that station. And I did one on the tarot, and then I did one on my work with the animals. And she was so pleased with that show, and so was the woman who ran it, that they called me up and said, look, we need someone to take on the Wednesday night spot at 8:30. Are you up for having your own show? And I said, sure. And I thought about what I wanted to call it. I thought, What the Animals Tell Me. And so it's a show devoted to animals, particularly to debunking and helping people get communicating with their own animals, learning how to do that, that it's really not hard, and how much that can enrich your life and your animal's life. It can really make so much more intimacy with them because they're communicating all the time, and it's just much smarter for us to start listening and engage. And some people say, well, I talk to them all the time and nothing happens. I said, yeah, you're not doing the other half, which is the listening. That's the part that really works. And
right.
my animals are my teachers. Absolutely. I've learned so much from them. So people can listen to me talking about such things as reincarnation and my work with the big cats or horses. I have guests on from time to time who run some of the sanctuaries. I like doing that. Sometimes I'll have Native American people who work with animal spirits, and that's taking it to a different level.
There's an interesting show on the local community radio station here in Tampa, WMNF 88.5, and I can't remember the day and time, but I know I listen to it all the time, but it's called Talking Animals, and I absolutely love the show. It's he talks about just news. There's like news and special information about animals. I believe that he's either vegetarian or vegan. I think his name is Duncan, but he does the show, and it's absolutely informative, all kinds of like information, and not just local. He's had some incredible guests on. The most recent guest, which kind of surprised me, was Bob Barker, and I didn't know that.
Well, he's a big activist.
Yeah, well, he was on the show just maybe 2 weeks ago, and they were talking about a particular bill, but at this point in time, I've completely forgotten the name of the bill and what it was for. But they really devoted the show to this bill, and it had to do with animals, of course.
Yeah.
And it was a great interview. So anybody that wants to listen to that can probably go back on the archives on WMNF, and I'll try to get more information about that show, and I'll post that in a comment along with the MP3 the songs. That way people can check it out. But definitely I will put a link up. I will make sure those links are fixed in the promotional.
Thank you.
So people can go back to your radio show and listen on Wednesday.
Yeah, that link is fine. The radio show link is fine. And where I have my link that is just for my my own website and page on the very, very bottom, that's fine. But the whole page, which will say Wise Woman Tarot and animals and this, that, and the other, those all go to a wild iris thing that was old.
It's so weird because what I did was I did a copy-paste.
Yep,
from
that's
exactly
why.
What you sent, so I don't know why it would toggle back to that. So.
I know, I don't know either, and I have to fix it as well. But one of a little piece of news about animals in Florida. which deeply disturbed me. But we have lost 90% of all the wildlife in South Florida to those snakes, to the ball pythons,
wow,
the boa constrictors, because people are just like, oh, I can't have my python anymore. I'll just let them loose in the marsh. And it's such a great environment for them to breed that they're taking over from the wildlife that's supposed to be here.
So it's upset the balance is what
totally.
It's done.
Totally.
That is so bizarre.
I know.
And see, this, you know, people talk about climate change and, you know, how that, you know, there's a lot of debunkers out there that say that that's not happening. We know climate change is happening.
Yeah, excuse me.
Animals. And something, and it doesn't have just to do with that, but when you have, like, massive amount of people releasing, you know, predatory animals into an area that has different predators and different
right.
plants and different victim animals,
then yeah,
what happens
kill them
is
down there.
Entire balance, and that, too, changes everything. It changes everything in the environment, the whole circle of life. I like to always go back to that term Hakuna Matata.
Yes.
And because that makes so much sense, Hakuna Matata, the circle of life, and if you upset that circle or you introduce something that's not supposed to be there or you take something away that's supposed to be there, nothing is ever right again. So we really have to be as spiritual women, as spiritual wise women, we have to encourage environmentalism. I don't understand why more people aren't, especially pagans and witches, are not more involved with environmentalism, because it is definitely a part of who we are, who we're supposed to be.
Yeah, I mean, if you say that you worship the mother, hello, who do you think you're standing on?
Yeah, and why
Mama.
Would you do anything? You know, if you don't stand up and say something when you know something is wrong,
that's right.
Then that makes you a complicit party.
It's
so
true.
Even if you write a letter to the editor, it doesn't take much time and effort to do that. You write a letter to the editor, write a letter to your congressperson. You don't have to stand on a street corner with a sign, of course, unless you perfectly well want to do that. But there's other things you can do if you can't do that.
And you can post on Facebook when you see something that really catches your interest and you say, this is wrong. I want the people who pay attention to what I have to say to know this.
Exactly, exactly. That's the way it should be. And, you know, upsetting the balance, that just hurts. It hurts my heart to hear that there's things. I've been reading a book and, of course, following the Deep Green Resistance, which is the name of the book, Deep Green Resistance. And Liare Keith, one of the writers, a feminist as well, she said to Occupy Oakland back in November, she did a little talk about it. She said 200 species, I think it was 200 species or 2,000. I can't even remember the number, but it was just such a remarkable number either way, go extinct every day.
Yeah.
And she said there's areas in China that don't even have any flowering plants anymore.
Mm.
I mean, we're living on a dying planet, so we've got to definitely be increasing awareness and cooking up that spiritual mojo. And just,
absolutely.
You
know, there's more tigers in this country than there is in all of Africa.
And why is that?
Because there are people that are unscrupulous that are breeding them here. And they breed them so that they can take pictures with the cubs. If any of you see people selling pictures, come get your picture taken with a tiger cub, unless they have, you know, some kind of really big preserve where they're doing care for other animals and other tigers. These are called picture tigers. And what they do is once they're above 45 pounds, they're no longer able to be held by the public. You have to have special licensure above 45 pounds, and then they euthanize these cubs, or they get sent to some kind of a sanctuary, or worse. And so it's very, very important to take a stand against people who are breeding exotics because they belong in the jungle, period.
Yeah. That is just as sick as can be, to bring them here, breed them, and then kill them before they're even adults. I mean,
and for as much as all of us who are involved with sanctuaries adore the animals there, and I can't believe that in this life I've been lucky enough to walk amongst tigers and lions and to be able to touch them and help them. I mean, how fantastic is that? Who would have thought as a child that I could do that? And as much as I love them and love my interaction, I wish that they were in the wild.
Yeah.
And safe.
Well, most people that know me know that I had an iguana for 18 years, and I bought her. No, I didn't buy her. She was given to me as a gift, and I kept her 18 years is a long time for any kind of reptile, but when I found out later they could live to 25 years if kept healthy in captivity. I mean, 25 years for an animal, for a person to keep an animal, that's quite a commitment.
Yeah.
I mean, that's longer than most marriages. You know
right.
what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
So I was thinking, you know, the longer I had her, the more I thought it's very disturbing that they'd bring these iguanas to this country and then sell them as hatchlings.
Yeah.
And expect them to stay healthy and expect them to thrive. And, of course, you know, everybody that lives here in Florida knows that here in South Florida they've released those into the environment. When they no longer want them, they just let them go.
Right.
And supposedly Miami is inundated with them. They're just everywhere. And they don't belong here. They belong
no.
in Central America and north of South America.
Well, I made a promise. Right around the winter solstice, that I would get to a sanctuary a week. And
mm-hmm.
since then, I've done it. This past weekend, I took a little break, just needed to. But I feel like, you know, that humans have done so much harm to animals. And I'm one person. I can't save all the animals of the world, but I can bite off my little piece, and I can do
and
what I can
help-
do.
Help in the areas that you know that you can help, because you can't take on the world.
Right, no.
But none of us can do that, and we know we're living on a dying planet, so we just take the little piece that we know we can work with and work with that, and hopefully others will do the same, and, you know, we can
and, you
create
know, I don't,
miracles.
I don't want to affirm.
We are.
I don't want to affirm that we're living on a dying planet.
Well,
I'm willing to say we're living on a planet that's in big trouble.
Right. Okay, that's a better way of framing it.
And we really need to raise the vibration.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's all about vibration. And as we do that, each in our way, the more each of us can find our little niche and put out really positive energy and not stay around people who bring out the worst, to stay where we're most effective, where we feel good in ourselves as we're doing our work, this is where we're effective, and this is where we change the vibration to one that's more receptive to harmony.
Mm-hmm.
And we're getting support from the other realms. And it doesn't mean we can just, you know, say, okay, all I got to do is wave a crystal around and the mothership's going to come and fix everything. You know, would that it be true? But that's part of the picture, I think, that we are getting help from other realms.
Well, that is that's a different way of framing it, and I think I'm going to start framing it in that same reference as well, because I've really been upset about the things I've been hearing about the planet lately. And of course, my whole
whole psyche
changed, you know, with the Gulf oil gusher. I refuse to call it a spill.
And
minimalistic
crap.
I've been devastated over the destruction from that. So
yes.
And of course, many, 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 many people are sick in the Gulf region, especially children, which are breathing in and taking in more toxins per body mass. And of course, anybody with an, you know, a compromised immune system are having huge problems right now. But the media doesn't want you to know any of that. So anyone listening, just send big, big, big bunches of energy to the people in the Gulf region, because this is going to eventually, if it continues this way, it's going to end up causing a diaspora of people moving out of the area. But right now, people are very, very sick. So we need to raise that vibration.
Yes, we do. And I tell you, one of the things that makes me the angriest is when you see the BP commercials. Nothing better than coming to Florida. No, it's Alabama. No, it's Mississippi. No, it's Louisiana. And look how beautiful our sand is. And look at our healthy people, healthy animals. And we were out. You can eat our shrimp. Hell to the no.
Yeah, pretty much anybody that's going to be eating seafood from the Gulf needs to reevaluate that decision, because
we want to live, you know.
Live, because the independent testing has shown that the fish and seafood are toxic, and if you're going to continue to eat it, then there's going to be a huge, huge spike in leukemia and other kinds of cancers within the next 5 to 10 years. So reevaluate that for, and I'm speaking to the listeners here.
Yes.
Reevaluate that for your families, for yourself, because we've had
plenty of. They're not telling the truth.
They're not telling the truth.
No.
And we here in this household have taken seafood completely off the menu. We have not had it in the house since probably May. Yeah, since May of 2010, we have not.
Yeah, here too.
Here.
I
don't even feed it to my animals. I won't even feed it. Like, you know, with my cat, she loves seafood. I won't get it to her. And you have to question, what's in the canned cat food? What
right.
are they putting in there?
Yeah, how are they getting rid of all this stuff?
Well, it was reported in the very first month after the Gulf oil spill, Gulf oil gusher, that you know, they were grabbing the bodies of the and the carcasses of the dead marine life and taking them to these buildings and burning a lot of them. But I have my doubts that a lot got burnt, because I'm sure some got ground up and it got used as chum for some of the fish farms. So if you're eating tilapia and it's okay, you better think again, because if they fed chum into those waters for the tilapia, then the tilapia ate that, and you're eating the tilapia. So, you know, it's coming back at you some way. It's in the food chain.
Yes.
I have become a flexitarian over the past several months. So once in a great, great while, I'll have a piece of chicken. Or I won't eat red meat at all. Or a piece of turkey I might eat, but that's very rare. And, you know, for the most part, I've cut out almost all the meat out of my diet just because I know about that food chain thing, and that scares me.
Yeah,
so,
it's hard stuff.
It's being healthy. I can honestly say it's made me healthier by making those choices. So we're getting into the last half hour of the show, and before we sign off, I want you to tell us about your next projects, your ebook about Janis Joplin. How can people buy that? Tell us about the book. Tell us about how Janis was an influence, and what's on your agenda for the next 5 years. Where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Woo. I also know that we've asked people to call in. That I don't know if anyone has.
Yeah, we haven't had any call-ins today. But that's
yeah, I keep hearing these little kind of not beeps, but like little interruptions.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know what that is, but if you're listening and you're wanting to call in, this might be a good time. Janis Joplin was such a huge, huge influence on me, and not just as a musician. I mean, it started out that way. I loved her music before she was hardly even known, and I actually did meet her a couple of times, and one occasion actually did have a drink with her quite by accident. I thought I was going out a door, and I walked into her dressing room, which one of the best accents I've ever had, and she gave me her drink. And I'm not a drinker, but I thought, well, if Janis Joplin gives you your drink, you drink. And I figured it was probably Southern Comfort, so I was going to be a big shot and drink with Janis. And I took this Dixie cup full of alcohol and chugged it down in one gulp and wound up doubled over coughing my guts out in front of her. And she was cackling and laughing and slapping me on the back and having a good old time. And she realized what had happened, that I was way out of my league. And when I went to her party, and, you know, it was wonderful to have gotten to hear her so many times and meet her. But the real thing happened after she died, and she started communicating with me. And I was only 20 years old. I didn't know too much about talking to dead people. But I was quite sure I was talking to one. She made it real clear. And it was like having a roommate for the longest time. And the first things I saw were just very quick images. But what I got from her, beyond a shadow of a doubt, she wanted everyone to know she did not kill herself. And as I thought about it over different bits of time and got more and more information, I began to understand what I thought had happened was what happened. She basically was murdered. It was not supposed to be, murder was supposed to be more rough her up, but she had already had a lot of liquor in her, and someone shot her up with pure heroin. And that is what she died on her death certificate. They said she died of heroin and alcohol poisoning, but it was not self-inflicted. The newspapers, and they changed the story after maybe a week or so, but they said she was found with a broken nose and a split lip and no paraphernalia or drugs, but they said there's no foul play. And I heard that, and I thought, no, that's crazy. It's not easy to break your nose.
Right.
How could she have broken her nose, split her lip? Oh, and she was clutching 450 in her hand, which was changed from cigarettes. She had given the guy downstairs a $5 bill, and up she went. And clearly, you know, you don't shoot yourself up with a drug and hold on to your money in the other hand.
Exactly. We've got a caller from area code 407. I think I might know who this is. Caller, you want to tell us who you are, and do you have any questions for Flash?
Sure. My name is Leah Fairchild. I'm a friend of Flash's on Facebook.
Hey, Leah.
And hi. I also, you know, have helped in the past promote Wise Women through our radio show, Front Porch Radio.
Well, good. Do you have any questions, Flash?
Yeah.
I just didn't know if you were doing any insights or readings. I have some animals, and I didn't know if you were doing any call-ins regarding that.
Yeah, I could do something really quick. You know, it wouldn't be like having a whole session or anything, but
sure.
we could take a quick look anyway.
That would be fantastic. I have actually five cats that I've brought in, and the dynamics are a bit humorous and funny. And I've moved recently, and two of them have gotten very sick. And I don't know if it's the energy of the house or just the change. They're all very sensitive, and I am too, to energetic shifts.
Yeah.
And extra thoughts on that.
Yeah, usually I have pictures to help me, but I'm going to have to just tune into this cold. And Are they having troubles with their lungs and nose and stuff like that?
No, it's more like blood in the stool and a little bit more serious things like that.
Uh-huh.
And it's been just since moving.
And do they all have it?
No, one of them does, but they just all haven't seemed the same since I've moved in.
What's the one that has that? What's the name?
His name is Miso.
Okay.
He's a Mancoon, peach and white Mancoon cat.
He's missing something or somebody.
Hmm.
That's part of it. And was he separated from somebody?
No, it's always just been me.
Was he real attached to the old place?
Yes. In fact, he was so attached that it took me 2 days to get him out from a little corner there.
Yeah, that's what I'm feeling.
Yeah.
That part of it is the space. And, I mean, I have several different things that would be useful for him to help him adjust in terms of the emotions. I'm thinking he's eating things he shouldn't. Possibly
yes.
Everything that you don't have tacked down.
Yes, my cats are like goats, him specifically. If he hears plastic, he wants it immediately.
Yeah.
And I have to hide everything, ribbons, plastic, string, everything.
Yeah, I think he ingested something that isn't sitting too well with him. And one of the things that I would recommend right off the top, and we'll have to give this more time, you know, if that doesn't just fix it, but there's a homeopathic called Nux Vomica, NUXVOMICA, and you'd use a 30C potency. You can get it at any health food store. It's a very common one. And you give homeopathy without any food and about 15 minutes on either side of food. And they're little white pellets. And you would just, some of my animals, I can just pop it in their mouths. I mean, if I can do that with a tiger, we can do it with a cat. But sometimes it's hard, and then I'll dissolve them like in a shot glass of water and use a dropper to get it in the mouth. And then that's fine, too. In that case, you'd use just two pellets, either way.
Wow.
Whether it's in the water or right into the mouth. And that's a good remedy when there's been some kind of poisoning, when the animal or you has gotten into something and it's not sitting well. That's a real good start. That's a good starting place. And then one of the flower essences that I use is called St. Francis water. And that particular one is good if there's unrest in the family and people aren't getting along, or if you bring in someone new.
Right.
I always use that. It's like, okay, you got your thing, I got mine, but we're family now. So everybody's got to get along.
That's great, because they don't all get along, and I feel like the mom who's stuck in the middle.
Yes, yes.
It's quite an interesting soap opera here.
Yeah, but, I mean, I think he's still suffering from the move.
I really felt like it was an emotional energy thing. I was feeling very strongly about that.
Well, you can do a cleansing of the house very easily.
Yeah. Yeah.
And should.
I have.
Anytime you move into some place new, you definitely want to do that. And that's, again, something else that we can talk about. But the dragon's blood, frankincense, and myrrh. But there's a protocol for it.
Thank you so much. It's so helpful. It's nice to get that confirmation of what I was feeling and what I can do.
Yeah, I mean, you always have to clean that way. But his is also very emotional.
I know, he's so sensitive.
He didn't want to leave.
Yeah, he did.
And, you know, I would have a talk with him.
Out.
I would have a talk with him about it. And then listen to what he has to say.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I've done the house blessing before, which really, that, you know, a lot, like Flash says, there's a protocol for it, and if you follow the protocol, I mean, I even do the outside before I move in somewhere.
Sure.
I do the outside, yeah, the yard, everything, just to make sure there's no lingering after effects from the people that have been there before or something from the other side, too, you know?
Yeah, you don't know what was underneath that house.
Right.
Well, it's funny that you say that, because the girl who had lived here before, she was very sad because she lost her cat, and she believes it crawled under the house and passed away. So it's interesting you use those words.
Yeah, well, you just never know with me about stuff like that. Stuff is just apt to pop out.
Right. That's so wonderful. Thank you so much, Flash. I'll give
you
a call.
You're very welcome. All right.
Okay, thanks.
For calling him.
Uh-huh.
But anyway.
So should we talk more about Janice, or do we have somebody else?
Nobody else at the moment. Yeah, tell us a little more about Janice.
Well, basically, when I first heard about, because she died right after Jimi Hendrix, talk about conspiracy theory, I really felt, and still kind of do, that we had a bloodless coup in the 60s. Well, it's not so bloodless, but, you know, they wiped out the Kennedys and Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, Jim Morrison. John Lennon knew he was being stalked and was going to be killed. And
right.
He said on one of his last movies, a music newsreel, I think it was John Lennon in New York, and he turns around with Yoko and says, "People, if you hear that I've been killed, it was murder."
I think this is happening a lot of times today in regards to a lot of the Hollywood characters and musicians, too, where there's a lot of evidence and a lot of people are whistleblowing at this present time that they've become victims of very, very greedy production companies and agents who have these people that they're supposed to be employed by these people. But I really do have a lot of feeling on this that it has to do with their money and their money flow. And when these people that are supposed to be employed
money
by
and
the
influence.
Stars, musicians or whatever.
And influence.
When these stars and musicians kind of figure out where their money's going, and they become down with the real story of what's going on with their money, then they become targets.
Yes.
And I forget who it was. I think it was a movie star just recently where he and his wife realized that this was going on. I'll come up with his name later, but in any case, he and his wife had actually, they fleed. They ended up in Canada.
Oh,
they
I know
left
who you're
Hollywood.
Talking about, yeah.
I can't think of his name right now. He has
a
brother.
Yeah, he got painted as a real jerk.
Randy Quaid.
There you go.
Was Randy Quaid, Dennis Quaid's brother.
Right.
And if you go back on YouTube videos, you can actually see that he did a press conference, I think, when they got to Canada and laid it all out there. And he talked about several different people that this had already happened to, where they were actually bumped off, and high-profile actors. And he just came right out with it and said it. And so, you know, this is permeated through our culture and through our society, just this whole greed factor, where, you know, money is the most important issue and everything else, even life, is secondary. And these people that have everybody doing everything for them, movie stars, musicians, high-profile people, how are they able to look at their own money? You know, they're kept busy by these production companies. They're doing all these different things. You know, they can't keep tabs on everything. And they're hiring these people to do that for them. And these people end up becoming greedy and grabbing at whatever they can get. So, you know, having money isn't everything. It sure makes things comfortable. But, you know, if you have that kind of money, then you have a whole other set of problems. And,
yes, well, Janice dropped me into the deep end of the psychic pool. And, you know, I was only 20 years old, but I was starting to understand how things were working. And, you know, and she did not say the government murdered me, but she said someone took me out. And I didn't
wow.
kill myself. And she said it loud and clear. And that went on. It was like having a roommate for the longest time. And she saved my life at least three times. And
the other
say,
was these rumors about Jimi Hendrix, you know, experiencing the same type of death. You
well,
know,
it's easy
the fact
when these people are doing a lot of drugs. It's very easy to take them out. It's easy to make it look like a drug overdose because they can do that to them.
And Jim Morrison was another one. You
and
know?
Michael Jackson.
And Michael Jackson. We could go on and on. I mean,
yes, we could.
But
yes,
a
we
lot
could.
Of these people, this is why, you know, there's certain stars that manage their own stuff and manage their own personal affairs, and they don't seem to be touched, and there doesn't seem to be a lot of scandal. And one person I can use, for example, is Mick Jagger, because, you know, he was an economics major, from what I understand, in college. So he's always handled his own money. And really the only scandal we've ever heard about him is women.
Right. And,
you know, but as far as money,
men in
or,
power,
you know,
men in power having many women, gee, that sounds familiar.
That's familiar, but, you know, you never heard any scandal about misappropriation of money or funds or him losing money or whatever, because he's a sharp cookie. He knows where his money is and who's got it and what they're doing with it, and he's on top of things when it comes to his money. So I'm just using him as an example.
Yeah, and there's others for sure. But one of the, it's possible that Janice was not taken out by the military-industrial complex, but it's quite possible that she was, simply because so much loss in culture and in politics and in leadership of all kinds was taken out at that time, never to be seen again. We have not had the leadership or the talent since the late 60s, early 70s, we've not gotten it back.
I got to agree with that.
And, you know, there could very well have been a reason. If John Lennon was still alive, he would be absolutely just getting a lot of people going. Same with Michael. If you listened to some of his later stuff, it was just gorgeous. And it was all about saving the planet. And his sensitivity, he couldn't save himself.
Right. And big influences. These people have all one thing in common. Just this main one thing is the fact that they appealed to the masses and could influence the masses.
Correct.
So when these people have that kind of power, I mean, that is more than, you know, mass marketing on television and commercials and everything. These people had the power to appeal to the masses, and I don't want to use the word manipulation, but increase awareness on whatever issues happen to be putting out there. And the big guys, the people in power that are really in power, didn't like that. And don't like that still. So.
Yep.
Now we're.
And, you know, it's not the way we'd like it to be at all.
Right. The status quo. We're going into the last 4 minutes of the show. And if you want to give us some links so people can find you and what your next project is, and then we'll sign off. But I want to make sure people have the links. And whatever links you put out there, I'll make sure they're on the blog post so people will catch the little widget to replay the show.
Wonderful.
And they'll also have links to research. So,
yes, you can find me at www.flashsilvermoon.com. silvermoon.com. And some people think it's Flash Silver Man. It's not. It's Silver Moon. And that's the way to get to my website, which has got all kinds of good stuff. And you can find me on Facebook. You can friend me. That's another way to find out some information. And I'm still in the completion of my book about the animals. And it's about reincarnation and the animals and my work with the animals in general. And it's called Lifetime Companions, Love Never Dies. And that's being completed. And, of course, there's always one more story that you want to get in there. And I've also finished an astrology book called Flash Silver Moon's Planetary Playbook, which has a series of guided visualizations in there for all the 12 signs of the zodiac, as well as other astrology information. And I'm looking for publishers. I'll just tell the truth about that. And I published the Janis book, Janis Joplin and Me, 40 Years of Music and Magic. And it's an e-book. You can get it right through my website. And there's also a book that's being edited now called Temple of Isis, about a past life of mine in ancient Egypt as a priestess in the Temple of the Bells. So those are some of the projects. I want to be recording more music and doing more work with the animals in the sanctuaries and, of course, more radio. And someone is talking about doing a documentary on me, so that's in the works too. Somewhere in there I'll sleep and eat. But
homeopathic remedy for introducing new animals to the household? What was that called?
It's a flower essence, and it comes from Green Hope Farms, and I carry it. It's called St. Francis Water.
St. Francis Water, okay.
Yeah, it's not on my website, but you can get it through me, and you can get it directly from Green Hope Farm also. And they are dear, dear, dear people. When they knew I was going to work on the dogs from New Orleans, from Katrina, they sent me hundreds of dollars worth of essences. They said, you're going to do the legwork. We're going to supply you with the product.
We're going into the last minute, so I wanted to close with thanking you for being on the show. And the widget will be up on the blog for the show and listen to the archive. And I also want to thank our sponsors, Daughters of Isis, Here Be Monsters, Roundtree 7, and the Hoodoo blog. And this has been a great show tonight, so I hope people share it and get in touch with Flash about anything having to do with animals, astrology, tarot. She's the lady in Florida that can handle your inquiries.
And I have clients all over the country, so it's cool.
Yeah, and thanks to all the listeners, even the people listening to the archives. Good night from the Wise Women Media Radio Show. Good night.
Night.